Chapter 2. Tents and Cookfires. Cyrus left his single-striped tunic on the tent pole hook. Instead, he selected a plain tunic of flaxen gray with no embellishments. If you wanted to see the range, sometimes you had to dress like a common rangeman. He pulled up his hood and veil before raising the tent flap. He stepped onto the sands, making sure no one was looking in his direction. Most would assume someone leaving the Vice Commander's tent and dressed as an unadorned rangeman was just that, just a rangeman. Still, he wanted every chance to keep his disguise intact. He walked southward between the tents. The smell of stew wafted toward him from the midday cookfire stoked by the old hands too gray and stooped to serve on the line, but too proud to retire at the Corps. The aroma brought back memories of Decimus's cooking. The sounds of a sitar and drums and soldiers singing caught his attention. However, it was the murmurs of discontent about Tamias's leadership that made him more alert. He knew that for the time being, as long as Justice was away, he was second in command and he had a duty to uphold. Cyrus couldn't help but reflect philosophically on his role as a soldier. He knew his duty was to defend the range and the people on it, but he also recognized the importance of focusing on the sands he could see. As he headed toward the cookfire stoked by the veteran soldiers, he mulled over his dual responsibility to maintain the chain of command and keep the morale of the troops high. He arrived at the circle of men and saw a few of the soldiers, with stew bowls in hand, skipping around like children to the music. One particularly boisterous soldier poked a drummer in the shoulder, breaking his rhythm.
Oi, Deble, they might make bolts of your sticks, huh? Just let the afters get at them.
He mimicked a blank stare and a half-smile of the dulled, pretending to whittle.
Oh, scat in your void den, bull, Tarion,
the drummer said.
My paws and after.
And it served, his honor restored,
said another in the group. The others murmured their agreement. The one who had spoken wore a blue stripe and circle atop it on his hood.
That symbol was as clear a mark as any.
Corvite peer.
But though he held the rank of peer, the Corvite wore no sergeant's pauldrons on his shoulders. Cyrus fouled that bit away. They were elevating mere archers from acolyte to peer these days, not making military promotions a prerequisite. That wouldn't have happened when Corvus was alive.
Tarion, the jokester, seemed a bit chastised by the crowd, but only a little.
All right, fine,
he said.
Enough with the morbid stuff. It was just a joke.
The drummer shot him a glance from the corner of his eye, seeming unready to let it go just yet.
Come on, Deble, get over it. Play. They haven't whittled away your sticks yet, huh? Huh?
He slapped the drummer's shoulder, grasped it, and shook him a bit in jovial fashion. The drummer brushed him off and shook his head, unable to hide a semi-smile. He took up his sticks and began a rhythm.
Quickly forgotten insult.
Sometimes memory was a burden. The change in mood was palpable as the drumming resumed, like a fire had been lit. These men seemed joined by the rhythm, bobbing heads and moving subtly to the sounds in synchrony. Then, the tones of a melody.
A finger harp. Someone had brought one out to the range. They were expensive.
Cyrus searched the crowd with his eyes for the player, the tones growing louder and clearer as the crowd parted and a white-robed figure stepped through.
A woman.
A woman physicker, holding a slab of wood with bits of metal interspersed at different lengths. They sprouted like long teeth from a cylinder of wood at one end. She thumbed these teeth by ones and twos, weaving a melody that further entranced the crowd. Only the Corvite seemed annoyed at her presence. After a few moments, the crowd parted again, with more murmurs and jostling than before. And in stepped a tall man wearing a captain's sash and pauldrons, his skin darker than charcoal, hair cleanly gathered in locks.
Urbanus.
The rhythm faded as the drummer seemed uncertain about the captain's intentions. Cyrus kept his veil up and hood lowered lest Urbanus recognize him. The man stood with the lean, coiled strength of a sand cat, his broad shoulders dwarfing the average man. His gaze traveled the circle, brows furrowed, seeming stern and scrutinizing. He turned his head to the physicker, watching her fingers. She played on, placidly returning his gaze, seeming unbothered by his arrival. What happened next provoked gasps from the crowd. Captain Urbanus pointed sharply at the archer drummer, called Deble, nodded once, then joined his hands behind his back. He drew himself up, and with his exhalation began a deep basso tone that seemed to vibrate the very sands around them.
Four sands of time might tell a tale of those whose spirits ne'er did quail. veins of waning trial and rock, who gave of life their grateful.
And eventually, a few voices joined in.
Forsaken, sing and fight, let not the darkness give you fright. The task is long, the burden great, but keep the shadow from the gate. Their life slowed heaven's scorching veil, neath midday sun, exposed and frail. Sacrifices whimpered not their pain and wounds and pride forgot. Oh, forsaken, sing and fight, let not the darkness give you fright. The task is long, the burden great, but keep the shadow from the gate.
As Urbanus finished, the crowd hushed. Cyrus looked around to see the reason. Off to the left, another figure approached, but this time the sash and pauldrons marking his captaincy weren't what drew the eye, nor the raised hood that shrouded his face, nor the gloves that covered his hands. Across his upper torso, from chest to waist, he wore the bright, glowing blue likeness of a crossbow, all four parts of the Corvite rank symbols emblazoned in ichor that shone even in the daylight. Stock, stirrup, stave, and string. Only one Corvite wore all four of these. Paulus, the Archon of the Corvites, and once aspiring, but spurned, leader of the range itself. Corvus's death had seen him earn one title, that of the faith, but not of the military. The entire Guild of Physickers had made very clear Commander Corvus's intentions on his deathbed, and no amount of Captain Paulus's protestations or subtle machinations would dislodge them. Cyrus watched the man. He could hear the swish of robes as the man approached, so silent was the crowd, except for the subtle thumbing of the finger harp by the woman Physicker. That one has little regard for rank, it seems. Archon Captain Paulus drew near to the Corvite peer who had spoken of penance and honor just minutes earlier. He placed a hand on his subordinate's shoulder, raising his own face and pulling back his hood. Paulus's face was sunbaked but otherwise pale at the neck, his beard the color of sand mottled with stone dust.
"Bright day, rangeman,"
Paulus said in the near silence. Many replied, and mostly in unison.
"It gladdens me to see you enjoying one another's fellowship and song,"
he said.
"These are blessings of which all of us, Corvite and impious alike, can partake."
A few in the crowd voiced their agreement. This was an address Paulus might not have given had he known Cyrus was present. But it was interesting to see. Cyrus looked to the Physicker woman who had stopped her melody but was taking a knife to the instrument with the focus of a surgeon examining her tools. Paulus took no notice, or if he did, refused to respond.
"As we face the threat of the nameless dark this night and in the nights, weeks, and months to come, let us give thanks for these simple pleasures. Pleasures made duller after a penance for violating the codes,"
Paulus said.
"By Corvus's might and blameless light."
The peer seated before Paulus had spoken up, and with all the zeal of a dutiful fanatic, and some responded. And masterfully done that was. Cyrus had grudging respect for the zealots, especially Paulus, overly dogmatic though he was. Cyrus didn't believe the myths literally, that the blameless were real or that they would open the path to paradise from the southern cliff's edge, letting the faithful use the soul bridge to travel away from this place of constant siege. But the Corvite codes did create a sense of order, a brutal order, but an order that otherwise might not exist in these treacherous sands, with the shadows constantly threatening Gamma's very existence. Cyrus watched as Paulus brought his palms together at his lips, flaxing gray-gloved hands to match his tunic, steepled at his mouth. Cyrus slipped away as the crowd stood. Roughly a third broke toward Paulus, crowding around the Archon. The woman Physicker did not look to be among them. The rest of the crowd dispersed in various directions, some to gatherings elsewhere among the tents, others to their own tents and beds. Cyrus paused to watch the men from the shade of a nearby tent. Mostly rankers, but a few sergeants as well, wearing shoulder pauldrons. Cyrus had that nagging feeling he kept getting these days, that all this order was balanced on a knife's edge, an equilibrium that he felt ill-equipped to maintain, with Justice gone and Paulus looming large among the remaining captains, while Tamias huddled over his battle board and whispered things many would take for heresy. Cyrus felt like a nursemaid might, watching a babe that wasn't hers. Justice could not return soon enough, and with Captain Decimus in tow.
"Vice Commander Cyrus,"
a voice said, breaking into his thoughts. He knew that voice. "Paulus, you recognize me." Cyrus did not bother to maintain his cover and turned toward the speaker, lowering his hood and veil.
"Ah, as I thought."
It was Paulus. He waggled his finger at Cyrus. From two sashes to one wasn't enough, so now you wear none at all, is that it?
Well, sometimes being invisible is a gift,
Cyrus said. I've given penance to a number of burglars and root fiends who felt the same.
Judging the transgressors, I bet you enjoyed that,
Cyrus said. He softened his words with a smirk. Some judge transgressors and others judge the judges, it seems, Paulus said.
Cyrus shook his head at that.
It's the dogmas, Paulus, that get a little extreme for my taste.
Ah,
let me tell you a story, Vice Commander. My father was a physicker. He taught me many things, some passed down from thinkers long forgotten by most on the range. One principle was that one should maintain an undeviating steadiness of purpose in what one knows to be right.
And how does one know what is right?
Look, Cyrus, at times, some may think me dogmatic, and perhaps I am, but without dogma, I ask you, Vice Commander, what do we have?
Well, common sense and reason, if you want my view. We've all got motivations, Paulus. I see no need to season them with someone else's ideas. That always seemed a bit dangerous to me.
But then, if we all cling to individualized motivations and needs, where would it end? With women running the range, seeking consensus before a pikeman lifts a finger against the shadow? Or perhaps the role of pikeman itself may be thought inhumane. Or perhaps we might self-deprecate to the point of considering that it is we, and not the shadow, who are interlopers along this cliffside.
Paulus shook his head.
So no, Vice Commander. The Corvites and Corvus's codes bring order where otherwise madness would masquerade as magnanimity.
All right. One question.
Please.
How long did it take to convince yourself of all that scat smear, Captain Paulus?
Onesimus had come up alongside Cyrus, matching his stride.
Or is that part of the Corvite training?
At this, Paulus's smile was slow and wide, but utterly free of humor. And then it was gone again, his face returning to neutral with something darker.
Excuse me, Paulus. Forgive our new captain, Cyrus said. He endures the difficulties of his post. We all know the ills a new captaincy can bring.
Paulus nodded.
Indeed, and the blessings of Corvus upon you, Captain. It does become easier with time.
He placed a hand on his own sash.
Onesimus
made a noise that was not quite impolite, but found another errand to head toward.
Cyrus noticed his sash was wrinkled and his pauldrons were ill-fitting. Probably matched his feelings about his new role. Cyrus wondered how long it would take his old friend to forgive him for the promotion he'd been forced into. As Onesimus moved away, Cyrus began again.
What I was going to ask is how long you expect the expedition to take, Cyrus said.
Seven more days, I believe, Paulus said.
That soon, Cyrus wondered aloud.
Then again, the Corvites really liked the number seven.
But we will need more pikemen, to be sure, Paulus said. Perhaps you could convince your Commander Tamias to increase the lengths of those already serving a penance.
Extend their nights as pikemen?
Cyrus asked.
But why and for how long?
A twofold increase should be sufficient, and the reasoning is simple. Desperate times require decisive action. Tamias can be decisive, can he not? Perceptions do seem to vary on this point.
Well, decisive or not, I'm not sure it's wise to double the penances, Cyrus began.
Of course, many folk back in the Corps would be none too happy to hear Harkroot burglary got their loved one six nights on the pike lines rather than three.
Well, if it were up to me, Vice Commander, that crime would require a dozen nights or more of penance. Let the weak will be dulled to nothingness if necessary, serving the range in the meantime. Then perhaps their weak blood would not contaminate the next crop of Gamma's progeny. In time, the strong-willed, who could avoid the root, would remain and pass their strength on to their children.
You drive a hard line, Archon Paulus.
And you carry a heavy burden, Vice Commander. We know not the hour when our souls will be flung into the void. Do apprise me if you feel the need to pass your duties on to more willing hands.
Paulus raised his gloved hands, fingers straight, palms inward. Cyrus wondered whether Paulus actually believed the fanatical ideas he spouted.
But asking that directly?
Paulus was a political animal and just as far ahead of Cyrus on that front as Cyrus was ahead of Tamias in social skills.
So they nodded to one another, said the appropriate words, and parted ways.
Bright day, Vice Commander.
Sun's blessing to you, Archon Paulus.
And blameless light.
Cyrus's feet moved him in the direction of his tent, now adjacent to Onesimus' temporary quarters from his new position as captain of the 10th.
7 days, he thought, or not much more. Then this would all be Justice's problem again.